We hope you find this WILL podcast to be valuable. A $10 voluntary credit card contribution at willpledge.org will help us continue to make podcasts of our programs available. Thank you. And that address again is willpledge.org. WILLPLEDGE.ORG. Now here's your program.
Good morning. Welcome to hour number two of Focus 580, our morning talk program. My name's David Inge. Glad to have you with us. The producers for the program, Harriet Williamson, Martha Deal, Kyle Mabry is at the controls this morning. In his State of the State address yesterday, Illinois Governor Pat Quinn, among other things, called for increased investment in Illinois' rail systems, talking specifically about the benefits of a high-speed rail, a line that would connect Chicago and St. Louis, and also one, a truly high-speed line, connecting Chicago and Urbana-Champaign. This morning, in this hour of the show, we'll be talking about the potential for high-speed rail in our part of the country, and our guest for the show is Richard Harnish. He's the executive director of the Midwest High Speed Rail Association. This is a Chicago-based organization that's interested in promoting high-speed rail generally and also efficient, fast passenger rail more generally. The association makes the argument that, in fact, high-speed rail could draw the major cities of the Midwest into reasonable commuting distance. And that would make it possible for the Midwestern economy to achieve its true potential. That's certainly what they argue. They have a website with a lot of information on high-speed rail. So if you're interested, you can certainly do that. Just put Midwest High-Speed Rail Association into your browser and you will find it. And here this morning, questions are welcome, as always. 333-9455 is the number for Champaign-Urbana listeners. Toll-free, 800-222-9455. And email will-talk@illinois.edu. So at any point here, people are welcome to send us email, a call. We just ask people to keep comments brief. That way we'll get as many callers in as possible. But, of course, anybody's welcome to participate. Mr. Harnish, hello.
Hello.
Thanks very much for talking with us.
It's my pleasure.
Well, it was quite a long speech that the governor gave yesterday, and his mention of rail was just a brief thing in a long speech. But having said that, I would expect that you were pleased to have him mention it at all.
Oh, yeah. It's really exciting that people really are starting to understand that we have to have fast, frequent, and dependable trains connecting not only the entire economy of Illinois, but the entire economy of the Midwest.
Yeah. And this is, I'm sure that we'll probably talk some more about this, but just to make the point at this point that the Obama administration does indeed have a kind of a vision for high-speed rail in the country, and they have laid out some projected high-speed corridors in the Pacific Northwest, in Southern California, along the eastern seaboard and down into the Deep South. And one major one would be here in the Midwest. There would be a hub in Chicago, and then the idea would be then there would be high-speed transport available to places like St. Louis, Indianapolis, Cleveland, Minneapolis, and so forth, and that would branch out in all those various directions, and that the center would be Chicago.
Absolutely. And one important thing to add to that is that we desperately need a direct connection from the entire Midwest to O'Hare. Air services is going to be incredibly challenged as the price of oil continues to get higher, and we need to make sure that we maintain that critical international connection at the airport by making it easier and more affordable for people to get there.
Yeah. Just as a sort of a general question, when you're looking at the viability of a high-speed corridor or a high-speed line, is there an optimum distance that is it needs to be so far, or do you think about population centers along the projected path? How exactly do you think about that?
Well, you know, it needs to be a big network, a very interconnected network, which means different kind of services for different kinds of markets. Certainly, if you have a high-speed train, there's probably no reason any longer to fly for distances even as far as 500 miles. Mm-hmm. You certainly can do Paris to Marseille, which is 500 miles in 3 hours, and that's very competitive with air. But, you know, even with the way, because of the uniqueness of the way trains operate, it still makes a lot of sense to have trains running from Chicago to San Francisco or Chicago to L.A. It's just a different kind of train.
And in the sense that, that's not where you, in a very long route like that, that's, you're thinking of more conventional speeds are adequate when you're talking about a trip that's that long?
Oh, absolutely. But, you know, people really want to pigeonhole train trips into a specific train length, the length of trip, and that really doesn't make sense. And the distances that high-speed trains are going are getting longer and longer. So the Chinese, just a couple of weeks ago, opened a 664-mile high-speed line. The trains do that in 3 hours. The average speed is 217 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that gets you Chicago to New York in 3 hours.
That's pretty astounding when you think about those speeds. And, you know, I think that people talk about high speed, and that, for example, people are talking about, and you've talked about, improving the route between Chicago and St. Louis and have trains there that could go 110 miles an hour as an average. I think that some people look at that and they sort of say, 110 miles an hour, that's not really high speed. 220, now that's high speed. When do you get to the point where you truly say, all right, at this kind of miles per hour, then we're really talking about high speed?
Well, the current standard where most of the world is building now is for cruising speeds of 220 miles an hour.
Mm-hmm.
And that certainly is doable in the Midwest, and it's certainly something we should be focusing on. We're also incredibly excited that the governor has made getting the current Chicago to St. Louis corridor upgraded to 110, which is probably the fastest you can do on freight lines shared with freight trains.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a critical project that needs to be done very quickly, and it can be implemented quickly. We hope that when the federal government announces the awards for its passenger rail projects in the next month, hopefully, I am certain that Illinois will get a big piece of that money to upgrade that line. That's very exciting.
Now, here, and I'm a little bit confused about this because you're talking about upgrading an existing line, which brings us the problems of the fast passenger train sharing the lines with freight. Now, I've also read that there are people who say, well, really what we need to do, if you're going to do that on this line, you actually need to lay another set of tracks so that the two trains, so you won't have to worry about the two trains competing, that the freight will move on one set of rails and the passenger train will move on another set of rails.
Well, and that's where Illinois has an incredibly exciting opportunity. In the Chicago to Champaign segment, mm-hmm. it is possible, because of a couple of unique circumstances, to build a high-speed line very quickly once the commitment to do it is there. And we have the possibility of even surpassing California with a link that can demonstrate what high-speed rail can do in, you know, in terms of large infrastructure projects, a very short period of time. We used to say that we should have that link open by 2016, but that's become a less palatable date. But there's certainly, if you're going to go faster than 110, you do have to build new tracks. They have to be completely separate, mm-hmm. but they can be alongside. And that's why the Chicago to Champaign segment is so exciting, because there is room to do that and do it fairly quickly.
So that would be for what you're saying, that would be your way to demonstrate that you could do it and that it would work well and that it would make a lot of sense. And I could see that people here at the university particularly could see the potential of having a very quick rail link between Champaign-Urbana and the city of Chicago.
Yeah, and it would be 45 minutes to get to downtown Chicago. And, you know, because you have to go slower within the city, roughly another half hour to get from downtown Chicago to the airport. But we think that that's an exciting link that we could use to prove, and it will prove, that high-speed trains will work in North America, and it'll show just how critical they are to the entire economy of the Midwest.
And what would the price tag be?
You know, I'm sorry. I remember O'Hare, Chicago to St. Louis for the entire thing is about $12 billion. So it's about in the range of a new interstate highway project,
yeah.
Actually.
So it certainly would be a significant amount of money. And I think that here the argument that people get into when they say, well, you know, high-speed rail, that's a swell idea, but it certainly would be very expensive. And there are questions about just what the ridership would be, how many people would take the train. And if you break it down, you know, break down the price tag per rider, you're talking about an astounding amount of money. So the question is, how do we justify spending that, you know, whether it's $14 billion or something like that? How do you, $14 billion, how do you justify that with what even we think at a very optimistic level would be the ridership?
Well, in our study of the line for the Chicago to St. Louis O'Hare whole, the whole thing, the ridership would be great enough to run a 500-seat train every hour, starting early in the morning and running late into the evening. Now, keep in mind that a Southwest jet is 137 seats, mm-hmm. and a 737 has, I'm sorry, a 747 has like 400 seats. So you're talking, you know, a 500-seat train leaving St. Louis every hour, stopping in Champaign every hour, and being 80% full. And the change in how now you've got people dropping into the middle of your town on foot, which means you don't have to provide them a parking space, which dramatically reduces your costs. It now provides a base of ridership for a streetcar line, and it's very exciting. Yesterday, the federal government also announced that they're going to change the requirements for federal money for building streetcars. So you could have a direct link between downtown Champaign, the university, and downtown Urbana that ties your whole city region into a single unit and gets everybody's costs down and builds your tax base. The opportunity here is so incredibly exciting, and it's something that we have to seize. And on top of that, we are so far behind the rest of the world that it's embarrassing. Every major country outside of North America has either major projects that have been constructed or are being constructed or have serious plans. Even Rio de Janeiro should have a high-speed line built by the Olympics. This is one of those things where everybody's going to have the advantages of these lower-cost trips, and we're not going to have them.
So you're thinking that you would get a substantial number of those people that today are flying between, say, St. Louis and Chicago, and Champaign and Chicago, and Springfield and Chicago, plus people who would, because it was there, because there was convenience, it was quick, there was a schedule that was running frequently enough so that you'd pick up a lot of people who maybe would go who today would not say, well, you know, maybe it'd be nice to go up to Chicago for the day, but it would take a lot of time and you lose a lot of time in transit, and there's not that much flexibility on when you leave and when you return, and it just seems like a more trouble than it's worth. If you could create that opportunity, you think that suddenly there would be enough people lining up there so that these trains that would go every hour would be close to full?
Absolutely. And, you know, most of the travel in the Midwest is done by car, the vast majority. And so, you know, at 45 minutes from Champaign to Chicago, you know, why drive? You know, especially considering the fact that if it's done the way we propose, you'd have both a stop downtown and one out by O'Hare. So you're connecting to the northwestern suburbs as well. But there's a perfect example. This Saturday, there's a group that really wants me to go out to Fort Wayne, Indiana. And I'd really like to go out and talk to them They'll probably have a decent size of last time I was there to one of these events, they stopped counting at 900 people that showed up at this rally to talk about bringing high-speed rail to Fort Wayne. And I'd really like to go. And I would definitely go if there was a train trip that was 45 minutes to an hour, kind of one of those ironies of I'm more likely to go out there and promote high-speed rail if they already had it. But, you know, I'm really concerned because I've been traveling a lot. I haven't been spending much time with my family, and I'd like to have a Saturday with the family. And it's a long drive. It'll take the whole day. So I'm not really sure yet whether I'm going to go or not. But if there was a high-speed train, I would definitely go. So it's that kind of decision that happens every day on a small scale that when you have the high-speed train to think tips, and because people are making these trips more often, they're seeing each other face-to-face more often, which means that they're coming to agreements quicker, they're doing business deals faster, they're being more innovative because things happen better when you're face-to-face. So this really is something that will transform our economy, and it's something that everybody else already has.
Yeah.
And we need to make it happen.
Our guest in this part of Focus 580 is Richard Harnish. He's the executive director of the Midwest High-Speed Rail Association. It's based in Chicago. And we're talking about potential for high-speed rail in the Midwest. And questions welcome. In fact, the lines are all full here, so we'll get right into talking with callers. 333-9455 here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. We'll start in with Belgium. Line... four. Hello.
Hello, and good morning to you, sir. I am very much for high-speed rail also, but unfortunately, I look at examples around the United States. I know the rest of the world it works just fine, but you look at other places in the United States where the rail systems are already somewhat there, though it may not be high-speed, I agree, but it's not supported. You look in the Bay Area, they have a fantastic rail system all over, but yet they don't generate enough revenue to keep it going without always increasing inputs, you know what I mean? It's very expensive. There must be some sort of psyche that's going on with the American public that doesn't allow this to work. Because, like you say, it works in other places in the world. Why doesn't it work here? And it's not just your Midwest idea is a very good idea, but even where it's already there, it's not working well. And it gets very expensive to build these things, as Mr. Inge pointed out.
Mm-hmm. Well, what do you think, Mr. Harnish?
Well, first we have to point out that the highway system is bankrupt as well. Part of the problem that we've had is that we have over-relied on the automobile. And if you look at the big areas that we are having trouble, it's primarily in houses that require a lot of driving to get to. It's the highway network required an $8 billion bailout a year ago and a $7 billion bailout this year. We've got the serious financing problems with the automobiles. So we've got a serious problem all around in transportation finance. Where train service is available, people use it in very high numbers relative to how competitive that service is built. And we've got a perfect example of that here. We led an effort to get the train service basically doubled in Illinois in 2006, and that resulted in three trains a day from Champaign to Chicago instead of two prior to that. And the ridership growth on that has been huge, and it's because you're making it more attractive to folks. Now, there's a tipping point at which the trains have to be fast enough, they have to be frequent enough, and they have to be dependable enough in order for people to use them in very large numbers. And that requires a commitment from the government to build the trains of the way they need to be built. And we're going to make the first step in that very shortly in upgrading the Chicago to St. Louis line. And today is the day that we need to commit to taking the next steps after that and starting the planning work for the next steps now.
Thank you very much, sir.
Thank you. Let's go next to someone in Indiana. This is line one. Hello.
Hello.
Yes.
Two questions. The first one deals with, unfortunately, how much money are we going to send abroad to purchase the technology to have these high-speed trains? And secondly, I was wondering if you could remember what the arguments were against high-speed trains in the United States at the time that became sort of a mantra for a short period of time. I've tried to find it quickly on the Internet and haven't had much luck at all. But I just sort of wonder what kind of arguments were brought against, you know, fiscal and that kind of thing. And where does the short-run airplane lines lay in this? Are they putting up barriers, so to speak? This is certainly going to hurt them if it does happen. Thanks a lot.
Okay. Well, it sounds like the first question is, as I hear it, the question is, well, who's going to build these trains, and do we have the technology to build them in the United States, or is this something that we're going to have to, are we going to have to buy a train that's built in, I don't know where, in Europe, in Asia?
Well, so we allowed this industry to die, like we did much of our industrial capacity. We allowed it to die and go elsewhere. And that's incredibly unfortunate. But all of the manufacturers that want to sell trains in the U.S. have committed to creating real industrial jobs in the United States actually assembling these trains here. We can also follow what happened in Spain and Korea and China, where they bought the first small round of trains from a foreign manufacturer, but then, in order to get the service started very quickly, but then built their own industries around that. And all three of those countries are very good examples of that happening.
The caller also asked about what sort of arguments have been marshaled against high-speed rail, and I know that this is something that you deal with on your website, and it seems to me that mostly it has to do with this question of, can it be made efficient enough? Can the level of service that you're talking about actually be realized? And even if you do that, is the ridership there? Are there enough people to fill those trains, as we talked about earlier?
Well, so the general themes center on the Americans love their cars and they love their individuality, and therefore Americans shouldn't have choices. That's the general theme. And yes, everybody loves cars. Everybody loves to drive, whether you live in the United States or in China or in France. The question is, are we going to provide the choices that people need to have in order to, one, use the best choice when it's available, two, to have low-cost options, three, to get there faster? It's really a question of what kind of place we want to live in and what we want to do to prepare for what's becoming a very likely possibility that Americans won't be able to afford to drive at the rates that they're accustomed to today. So what do we do today to make sure that that level of mobility that we've become used to continues to be possible?
The other thing that the caller was asking about was how airlines feel about this, because it would, if it works out the way you, with the kind of scenario that you laid out, you would expect that it would be taking customers away from commuter airlines, those airlines now that are, as I said before, say they're flying from people between Chicago and St. Louis and Urbana, Champaign and Chicago and Indianapolis and Chicago and Minneapolis and Chicago and Detroit and Chicago, you know, those sorts of trips.
Well, you know, a number of airline executives have talked about how challenging it is to run the existing airline network at $80 a barrel. You know, I used to only fly Southwest Airlines because I wanted to always be on a profitable airline. And unfortunately, it is impossible now to fly on a profitable airline. So the airline industry is going to have to restructure. And the what they need to get to is longer trips with more seats. And that means increasingly flying from the bigger airports to bigger airports and hopefully finding another way to get people from places like Champaign, et cetera, to places like O'Hare or Lambert so that they can fly these big planes. And as the airline industry restructures, it's critical that in order to keep the Midwest economy connected to other economies around the world, that we figure out how to get those people to O'Hare some other way.
We are a little bit past our midpoint here. Let me introduce again the guest. Richard Harnish is the executive director of the Midwest High-Speed Rail Association. They're based in Chicago, and it's a nonprofit organization that's interested in promoting high-speed rail specifically, but also efficient passenger rail transport in a more general kind of a way. And we're talking here about his thoughts about the potential for high-speed rail in the Midwest. And we have a number of calls again, 333-9455. That's the number for local folks here in Champaign-Urbana. Toll-free 800-222-9455. Email will-talk@illinois.edu. Next, we will talk with someone in Champaign, line 3. Hello.
I really think this is a great idea. It's green. It'll make the make us get away from fossil fuels. I think that's a wonderful idea. But I wanted to ask a few questions. Is it going to be electric? Is this an electric train? Or how is it going to be powered? And if we're going to have to use oil or anything like that, anything that would harm the environment. And I'd like to see it come down state, too, to Mattoon, because I think there would be plenty of riders. And also, there was another question I wanted to ask. I was thinking, I thought this was going to be above ground. I thought maybe that might be a good idea, putting it above ground, and there wouldn't be any problem with the routes for the freight trains. And I'll hang up and let you speak.
All right. Well, let's go to the first question for the true high-speed line. We were talking earlier about the potential for a true high-speed line between Champaign and Chicago. Would that, in fact, be an electric train?
Yes. The 220-mile-an-hour trains do need to run with electricity. Or with electric wires. And the reason for that is, as you know, actually diesel trains are electric trains that carry around their own generator. And once you get to higher speeds, the generator becomes too heavy to carry around with you. So it would have to be electric. That gives us the flexibility to use whatever kind of energy is available. So if wind is available, then it can be used. Wind can be used. You know, clean coal, whatever is there available to generate electricity. And the you end up with such a dramatic reduction in the level of energy needed that between the two of them, it becomes very exciting. And I agree, Mattoon should have very high-quality train service. Under the existing rules, this isn't possible, but in most places in the world where they have high-speed trains, the high-speed trains go very fast on new grade-separated, separate from freight tracks. They go very fast, but then they go at conventional speeds out on the conventional network, and they just leave the dedicated tracks and they go on. Under the existing rules in the United States, that's not possible, but you know, if you've got a 45-minute trip from Champaign to Chicago, it becomes very reasonable to talk about some sort of shuttle train that would go from downstate Illinois and then have a cross-platform transfer at Champaign.
Let's just go back here to just one point you touched on. I think it's the case that the true high-speed trains that we see around the world, they all operate on dedicated lines. Nothing else but that train runs on that. And there's this big issue of grade crossings and safety and security. If you're going to do true high-speed rail here in the United States, don't you really have to lay new track that can that will have the right infrastructure that can handle that speed, that is dedicated, and also you can't have grade crossings.
Correct. And that's an issue that we're going to have to work through in how you build this grade crossing-free infrastructure. And it's going to take some discussion to figure out how to make that happen. The way they do it in Japan and in China, and I just rode the Beijing to Shenzhen line probably about a month ago, and it's up on structure the entire way. So the farmers have complete access from one side to the other because it's on a structure. It's more expensive to do it that way, but that's one option. And, you know, the line from Beijing to Shanghai, which again is Chicago to New York, it's going to be on structure the entire route. And that's one of the things we need to look into.
All right. To someone here in Bloomington on a cell phone, I believe, line one. Hello.
Yeah, good morning. You know, two things are kind of, it's almost a pipe dream. I agree with you. We ought to be on that route. But one, it's very expensive. We started talking about it now. We start doing it now. By the time the drawings got off the drawing board, it's 10 years down the road. Then it's another 10 to 20 years to get the belts halfway decent. Now, I've had the experience. I've been trying to get off airplanes and go trains from here out west. And it's so expensive. It's more expensive to go on a train now than it is to go to, to go fly. That's one. It's an inconvenience for people, and that's I think is the biggest issue. Number two, Europe, and most of my family is in Europe, has been built around trains and not around automobiles because of the roads and the small towns, especially in Europe itself, are not big enough to handle the kind of volume that we're handling. The other thing is, too, most people work, you know, in different areas. In other words, if I went and I worked in Chicago, my wife might be working in Northbrook. Or if I was working down there, you might be in Champaign, but then I've got somebody in, Piatone or someplace. It's very difficult to run it. Now, I have had experience where I'm at. They extended it, the train lines for Metra. 8-9 miles. It took them 2.5, almost 3 years to take all the railroad ties out and put concrete ones in there and then extend the line. So they have to have the third rail. It took them, you know, just for 8-9 miles, 3 years. If it's a good idea, but it's very expensive when an economy is down and the jobs that would be created would probably be all union jobs, which the regular contractor wouldn't get a shot at. It's very difficult. It's very difficult to do what you're saying. I mean, nobody, LA's tried it. LA's got all kinds of problems. They used to have a commuter service from the high desert years ago that went down to LA. Now they have one going, but they're having problems staying afloat as well as Amtrak or any other rail service. I mean, it's got to be more affordable and more easier, quicker done, because I'd love to do it. When I go to Chicago, I get in the train and go all the time. But it's difficult for the average Joe anymore to spend money and justify that.
Yeah,
thanks. I'll get off and listen.
Yeah, I think that there are probably a lot of people who would echo the comments of the callers. At least they would say something like, you know, this is a great idea, and if the train was there, I would ride it, but what we're talking about here is very ambitious, and it would be very expensive. And particularly at a time like this, it's very difficult to think about a project where you're spending $12 billion, $14 billion. I mean, that's a lot of money.
First, to answer one of the smaller questions, in a lot of cases, the long-distance trains have become very expensive. And it has a lot to do with the policies of the previous president. Because remember, Amtrak, the entire board of Amtrak is appointed by the president of the United States. And the previous president was very clear in his desire to do away with interstate passenger trains. Mm-hmm. So one of the things they did was they made it impossible for Amtrak to buy new cars. And so they can't have the trains at the lengths that they need to have them in order to charge attractive fares so that they can attract a lot of people. Trains, you need to you either have low fares with a lot of people on them or you have high fares with few people on them. And so what they've been forced to do is have high fares with just a few people. And that's been very, very damaging to the rail network. But, you know, we are in an economic crisis. And part of the reason, part of what that economic crisis is telling us is that we have to restructure the way we do business. We simply cannot go back to using debt to pretend that we're having a strong economy like we did through the first decade. We have to restructure the way we do business. And in order to restructure the way we do business, we need a big, bold project that says we are going to change the way we do things. And one of the key areas that we're having the most problems in is transportation. Again, the core of many of our financing issues has to do with the way we use transportation and how much money we're spending on transportation. And we need to take a big, bold step and say, we're going to change that. And the way we change that, in part, is high-speed rail. We also need to put a lot more people onto local transit with buses and streetcars. We need to make it safe for people to walk where it's not safe to walk today. We need to make it attractive for people to walk. We have to change the way we do business, and by committing to a high-speed rail network for the Midwest and the United States, that is the bold thing that we can do to say we are going to become ready for the economy that's coming on us faster than we realize.
All right. We are coming to the point here where we have maybe about 15 minutes left, and the guest in this hour, Richard Harnish, he is the executive director of the Midwest High-Speed Rail Association based in Chicago. 333-9455, toll-free 800-222-9455. Those are the numbers if you'd like to call in, and you can send us email at will-talk@illinois.edu. Let us talk with somebody else here, and the next person in line is going to be in Atlanta, Illinois, line 4. Hello.
Hi, very interesting conversation. I'd like to say a couple things about high-speed rail. I travel everywhere by train if I possibly can and have had good experiences and bad experiences. So generally, you know, if a train's on time and does the advertised, it's usually fairly good. The thing that I think that you're kind of heading in the right direction on high-speed rail is the efficiency, mainly the energy efficiency. And maybe that's the tact we ought to take. Let's make the most trains have the possibility of being by far the most energy-efficient means of transportation, and the fact that the development of those efficiencies haven't even really been thought about. I mean, hybrid trains are a tremendous possibility, and hybrid trains in the United States and the West were used a long, long time ago. So there's all kind of technologies that really could enhance the efficiency of trains, and then through education, maybe we ought to think that way, and high speed's going to evolve, but we ought to work on the efficiencies. Now, one disadvantage of high-speed trains, as far as I'm concerned, of taking the train from where I live near Lincoln, Illinois, it's really convenient. I drive to Lincoln and hop on the train, and I'm in Chicago, or I'm at least to a hub where I can go anywhere in the country from just driving 9 miles. Now, a high-speed train isn't going to stop at Lincoln. I mean, it's going to service St. Louis people, and it's going to service Springfield people maybe, and Chicago people. But the people in between are going to have to drive or find some other kind of transportation to a station to catch the high-speed train. So high-speed trains in that respect have, you know, somewhat disadvantaged where a regular train that can, say, run 100 mile an hour on schedule is a lot more flexible. So I'll shut up and listen. Thank you.
Okay.
Well, Lincoln will very soon, assuming that I am right, that we will get a goodly portion of the stimulus money for rail development. In the next several years, Lincoln will have much faster trains than it does today. And that's incredibly exciting. We worked very hard to make that a reality. And it's that will happen. The question is now, are we going to start planning and aggressively looking at the next steps? And energy efficiency really is one of the critical issues. And I'm looking here at a chart that kind of in a more scientific way sums that up. They looked at inner city trips kind of in an average. And they are saying in this book, it's in a book called Transport Revolutions, Moving People and Freight Without Oil. They're looking at a personal vehicle uses 2.6 megajoules per passenger kilometer. Those terms don't matter more than just the relative number. So 2.6 for a personal vehicle, 0.9 megajoules per passenger kilometer for a diesel train, and 0.3 for a high-speed train. And a lot of that's based on the fact that as you get faster, you put more people on the train and you get more efficiency. But you really do take a lot of energy usage out of the system if you switch people to trains. You take a tremendous amount out if you can get local trips to switch to walking or biking. And by taking energy out, you're taking cost out, and that means that we've got more money to spend on the other things of life that we'd really like to have.
Thank you.
All right. Thanks for the call. Let us go again to another caller, and that would be Urbana, line two. Hello.
Hello. I like the idea of a high-speed train, but one concern I have is the ecological impact of the train. The rail line that extends from Chicago to Champaign and into southern Illinois, it's a very old rail line. It was built over original prairie. And along that railroad, there's lots of the original prairie left. And considering how much of the prairie that has already been destroyed, it seems to me it would be a shame to destroy the little that was left to build another rail line. So I was wondering if you had considered that kind of ecological impact, and are you planning to build it like over the relatively vacant the prairie where the prairie is located along the sides of the railroad, or are you going to buy like farmland from farmers and build a line over more developed property? In which case, the ecological impact would be less, but it would probably cost more to build the line, I would think. So I was just wondering what your reaction would be to that.
One thing that needs to happen is we need to very quickly move into design and then environmental review. And I agree with you. We've only got a couple pieces, the few remaining pieces of prairie that we have left. We certainly need to maintain. But the environmental review process is where those kinds of issues get measured and decided on. Mm-hmm. And that's one of the reasons we need to move into that process very quickly.
Okay.
All right, thank you. Let's go to another Urbana caller. This is line three. Hello.
Hello. Illinois is the second most insolvent state in the nation, trailing only California. And we simply cannot afford it at this time. Even if it did create jobs, our first priority should be to get our fiscal house in order and to pay off the vendors and institutions that have been owed money for several months. For example, the University of Illinois is owed $400 million by the state. And to put money into a high-speed rail service, even if it is a good idea, and create other jobs. Meanwhile, the businesses that are owed money are in danger of going out of business because they cannot pay their bills.
Well, what do you think, Mr. Harnish?
That's absolutely correct. We have to get our finances in this state in order, and we need to do it fast. One of the key components of doing that is protecting and growing the tax base. And the key to that is making sure that we have very good, high-quality, and low-cost transportation options. And it's unfortunate that we are so far behind the rest of the world on this. But today, if a GM executive wants to go to the plant in Zaragoza, he flies to Madrid, has a quick connection to a high-speed train, and he's in Zaragoza in less than an hour. If he's coming to a similar plant here in the Midwest, he's got to get in a car, he's got to have somebody drive him or drive himself for hours, and the problems that go along with that. Now, if you're a worldwide business deciding which plant to keep open or which to expand or where to put a plant, it's a lot more attractive to put it in that place where you can get there from the major international airport quickly, easily, and productively. And that's one of the key things that we have to do to restructure our economy to deal with the issues that we have with energy and with transportation.
We talked a little bit earlier about the fact that the Obama administration, their attitude towards rail is different from that of the Bush administration. And in fact, they have allocated $8 billion in stimulus money for projects like the kind of things that we're talking about. And I guess sometime in the next couple of months, there'll be decisions made about where that money goes. And then here in the state of Illinois, we are hoping to get some of that. That goes to this question, and again, connecting with what the caller was just saying, what potential is there for the kind of projects that you're talking about for at least some federal money so that the state of Illinois wouldn't be bearing the entire cost?
One, on the stimulus money, the state did apply for money for starting new service to Rockford and Dubuque and new service to the Quad Cities. That's very exciting. For making some improvements to the existing Amtrak service to Quincy and to Champaign, which, again, is very exciting. And then the big project coming out of the stimulus is upgrading the existing service between Chicago, Bloomington, Springfield, and St. Louis.
Mm-hmm.
So that will be done with federal money. Now, we are tasked to do at the federal level, we meaning the country, in deciding what our transportation financing structure is going to look like. And a big part of the reason that that's being delayed is coming to terms with the fact that with the existing gas tax rates, we can't afford the highway network. We probably can't even afford to maintain it. So we're going to have a decision soon at the federal level of how we're going to pay for transportation. And if people want high-speed rail to be part of that package, today's the day that you need to tell your congressmen and your senators that high-speed rail needs to be placed at a very high priority so that we can, again, restructure the way we do business in the state.
We'll try to get at least one more caller here. The next person in line is in Decatur, line one. Hello.
Yes, I have a couple of quick comments. First off, $8 billion is chicken feed because they gave $40 billion to the airlines after 9/11. So that's number one. Number two, the line to from Champaign to Chicago was double-tracked, so there's room without destroying the prairie to improve that line. Now, my comment that I wanted to make is that it's imperative that we do this now, and what we should be doing, because we're in the competition for in the world against China and everybody else for resources, we'd better be buying up the steel rail and banking it. Just buy it, put it someplace, warehouse it, whatever, until we can lay the track. Because if we don't, the cost of steel is going to go up and up and up and up and up in the future. And so, yeah, we're in debt now, but we're going to be in greater debt if we try and do this later and put it off. We got to do it now. So if once we get the rail in, then we can electrify it in the future and save fuel. But we got to get this going now. So I'll listen to your comments.
All right. Well, you can comment on that any way you like, Mr. Harnish.
Well, China is essentially doing that right now. They are definitely doing it with oil. They've been very aggressive in locking in oil supplies for years to come. They're doing it with coal. They're very aggressively importing coal right now. So it's absolutely correct that we need to be thinking in terms of long-term supplies of major components of everything.
We're almost at the point we have to finish. And I guess I feel coming back to the point that that people here in the United States have been talking about high-speed rail and its advantages for some time, and it seems that the advantages are fairly clear. And yet after all of that time, here we are 2010, there is only one line, the Amtrak Acela, that runs from Boston to D.C., that's high-speed, and it's not really even high-speed. After all this time, only one line. Why is it that after all the talk, and what some people would argue are clear advantages, is that that's only as far as we've gotten?
I don't want to spend the days that it would take to wrap that question up. But the short answer is that we haven't told our elected officials that we want it to be a priority, and now is the time to do that. We need to make it clear, as the federal and state governments are making huge decisions about what our future is going to look like, that we make it clear that we want good, high-quality transportation that includes high-speed rail, it includes expanded transit, it includes safe and enjoyable walking, and we need to make that very clear to our elected officials right now.
Well, we're going to have to leave it at that. If people are interested in finding out more about the Midwest High-Speed Rail Association, and our guest Richard Harnish is the executive director, they have a website with a lot of information on the subject. You can take a look at that. If you have internet access, just put that into your browser, Midwest High-Speed Rail Association, you'll find it. Mr. Harnish, thanks very much for talking with us.
Thank you.